For over 10 years, we've been bringing you killer metal music and frank discussions about heavy metal. Wait, who the hell is Frank? You are tuned into MSR Cast, brought to you by Mainstream Resistance. Here are your hosts, Kerry the Metal Geek and Sean the Metal Pigeon. Keep it metal.
Hi, this is James Avera. I'm going back to old school. MSR Cast? Oh, come on. Yes, we've been around for a long time, and we're not going away. This is James Avera from Hellstar. Support your local scene.
Right on the road, on stream and break. Welcome, my friend, to episode number 207 of MSR Cast, your metal podcast. Man, 207, that's crazy to hear. I am one of your hosts. I am Carrie the Metal Geek.
And I'm Sean the Metal Pigeon.
How the fuck are you, man?
Very good. How are you?
I'm good.
Exhausted?
Exhausted is a, it's a word, yeah. It's an apt description.
Been a crazy month and a half for you.
It's been a whirlwind, yeah. So, work is over. Not really over, but it's calmed down
slowing down a little bit.
Not as much. I work for a big convention, let's just call it that, which is what it is. And the few months leading up to the show are very hectic and very busy.
Yeah.
But
in case you were wondering why it's been a while since the last episode.
Yeah, and then digesting so much new metal and
so many
new good albums have come out. Maybe my album of the year already. Let's jump into it. We've already played the song.
Yeah.
So we started this episode with Amorphis from the album Queen of Time. You picked out this song. I like this song, but it's not my favorite on the album, which is a good song though.
It's not, I mean, I actually think my favorite song on the album is The Bee, which opened the
That's opener, a badass song.
Just because of the kind of jarring brutality of it. But this song, I just had a feeling we had to play it on the podcast because obviously it's got Annika van Giersbergen on guest vocals.
Who? Oh, you mean my girlfriend?
And, you know,
every metalhead's girlfriend?
It's also one of the catchiest songs I've ever heard this band do.
It is very catchy. I will say my favorite song on the album right now is Heart of the Giant. There's some really cool melodies and keyboard melodies they've inputted into that song. It's so, so good. But I think one of my songs of the year, The Bee, of course, is a great song. But Wrong Direction, that chorus and so good.
You know, I actually think that's one of my least favorite songs on the album. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, because I wrote a review on it, and I like the album. It's a good album. It's not a great album to me. It's a good album.
I'll disagree with you 100% right there.
And you know that two years ago, I was over here saying Under the Red Cloud, my album of the year.
Yeah.
And I kind of was expecting this album. It's always hard for a band to follow up an album that you consider to be super great with one that's equally or better.
Yeah.
So I was bracing myself for, I'm going to like it. It's going to be Amorphis. I'm looking forward to hearing these songs live, but it's not going to meet. Thankfully, in the case of Amorphis, though, it wasn't that much of a drop off. It's like, oh, okay, I don't love it. I didn't find myself addicted to it like I was with Under the Red Cloud.
I'm actually the opposite way.
Right.
I liked Under the Red Cloud. Well, it's not my favorite album of them.
Right.
I think this is, I'm not going to say their best album since like To Anella and stuff in that era, but overall song wise, it's one of my favorite albums from them.
What you can easily tell on this album is that it's continuing from the sound they really seem to open up on the last album.
Definitely, yeah.
The highly melodic, not quite power metal influence, but almost a, like coming from that vein of that melodic influence. Like, It was like the difference between Circle and Under the Red Cloud was the sort of brightness of the melodies.
Yeah, I can see that for sure.
Where Circle was still a little more downtrodden, had some moments where it was all kind of minor key and it didn't quite like, you know, leap out at you. This album to me, it didn't go back to that. It didn't dip down to that Circle level, but I think there's some little things they tried here that didn't work. For me, at least, like, just musically. But other than that, you know, it's hard to find fault with it. It was just kind of like, yeah, it didn't impact me as much as the last one. And that's no fault of the bands, because I know that this is impacting other Amorphis fans way more than the last one did. They're just that kind of a band. This is a band that, and when I wrote my review for Under the Red Cloud, I compared them to the New England Patriots, a sports analogy.
Sports. They're sports ball, right?
They always win in sports ball every season. They're one of the best teams in sports ball.
Sports ball, all right.
And so they're always going to be releasing good albums.
Yeah.
They're a band that always has the potential for one of those good albums to be a great album. Mm-hmm. And I think they nailed that with the last one.
Do you think Amorphis is in that Iron Maiden thing? Or so, okay, go with me here. everybody loves Iron Maiden, one of the best bands in the world, but sometimes they'll put out a clunker of an album, and the next album will be phenomenal. Then a clunker, and then phenomenal. I think they're on the clunker album cycle right now, because even though I liked Book of Souls a lot, it's not the best Iron Maiden album.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's a good analogy. For me, I can never use Maiden as an analogy because I just love that band so much.
I'm clouded.
But yeah, I mean, Book of Souls.
You're under the red cloud.
Book of Souls was inferior to the Final Frontier, which I think is an underrated album.
Yeah, me too, for sure.
But you go back and listen to that, that is an underrated album. But with Amorphis, you know, I thought the last album they had done that really wowed me was Skyforger, where I thought like that album was like a shard away from being a masterpiece. And I thought that Under the Red Cloud was a masterpiece. Before that, you'd have to go back to Tales of a Thousand Lakes for me to consider an Amorphis album. But how many bands release, not just three, but, you know, they let alone just one masterpiece album. So many bands just never do that. Amorphis has three in my book. That's a masterpiece.
They have more than that in my book, but right. I am an unapologetic Amorphis fanboy.
Right. I mean, and if you talk to me about Camelot, I'll tell you. Yeah. Well, and I'll say it as a fact. I'll say Fourth Legacy, Karma, Black Halo.
Black Halo, I like that album a lot.
And Epica. Those four albums were masterpieces.
We've talked about the new you almost said Epica, the new Camelot album on the show. I've given it another couple spins,
right,
and it is not as bad as I thought it was the first time I heard it. I'm actually into it a little bit more, but it's still not my favorite album by them, for sure.
I actually listened to it last night just to see, in preparation for the show. And my opinion still stands on it. Still, that band is trending in the wrong direction. And when I saw that show, and we'll talk more about that later, the show reinforced that belief for me.
Let's talk about the Camelot show right now.
Okay.
I did not go to it.
I'm writing this piece right now. It's going to go up. By the time you hear this podcast, the piece will be up. I've learned something. I've been to a lot of shows in the past month, and I learned something about going to shows that you have to either have one of two things going into a show to enjoy it. You have to have anticipation or surprise. If you don't have any one of those things, you're not going to enjoy the show. With the Camelot show, I walked in there knowing the set list by viewing it ahead of time. Yep. That was on me. But they played nine of the same songs that I saw them play in Houston the last time they came in 2015. And those same songs they played in Austin when I saw them in 2012. I felt like I was seeing the same show apart from the new material they folded in.
Right.
They also only played four Roy Khan songs, and they were the same four they played the last time.
But, which ones?
March of Mephisto,
okay.
Rule of the World, Great Pandemonium, Forever. I mean, just the same ones they always play.
Those are sort of like March of Mephisto and Pandemonium. They're sort of staples in their live set, I would think so.
Maybe, but if
it's their,
they're not quite Fear of the Dark and you know, Number of the Beast.
I was about to say Fear of the Dark. Like it's their Fear of the Dark.
Like I just think that they're always continually looking towards that new fan that's coming in.
Yeah,
and they're not paying attention to the older fans who are there. And I actually talked to a guy at the show, and I was like, "What do you think of the set list?" He's like, "Eh, you know, it's all right. I would have liked to hear more Roy songs." I'm like, "Yeah. I would have liked to hear more Roy songs."
Well, you being a hardcore Camelot fanboy, and I don't take offense by calling us fanboys.
No.
And you coming out of the show and not number one, not having a good time. Well, you had a good time, but it could have been better, in your opinion.
Don't get me wrong. They played really well. They're professional.
Oh, yeah.
They sounded good. He sang really well. But all the beats of the show were the same that I saw them the last time.
You think they're just going through the motions?
But they were going through the motions. Like, he played a ballad from the last album. On this tour, they played that same song where the rest of the band goes away for a little water break, and he's up there with the keyboardist, Oliver Palatide. They're just doing him and the keyboards. And it's a chance for the band to take a break. Well, it's just like, I saw that the last time, and you guys are doing the same exact things. And it was down to the exact hand gestures. I was like, I remember that hand gesture. You're doing the exact same thing.
They got it to a science.
It's like, I don't think that that's in the spirit of rock and roll, like just in general.
So you know what this I mean? is when bands, when they start going through the motions and you get bored, and it's when they stop in my opinion, when they stop becoming a productive band, they start, their albums start to get progressively worse. It's just, okay, now we're making money. Our fan, we know what our fans want, right, and we're going to give it to them no matter how much it ruins our integrity.
But
you know what I mean?
But I mean, look at, okay, you know me. You know how much of a Camelot fanboy I am. Normally, a fanboy should be an apologist for a band. I'm over here saying that there's a problem because I'm a diehard fan. I've stuck with this band for over a decade now, and I've been with them through a vocalist change, for God's sakes.
I mean, for fuck's sake, dude, you got Camelot tattooed on your forehead.
Yeah, and for me to be saying these things, that means that there's something going on, like. And there, it wasn't just me. It was like, I talked to another guy there. I was saying.
So maybe their fans need to sit them down and have a Camelot intervention.
And to further back up what I was saying, the new album debuted 70 spots lower on the Billboard chart than the freaking last one. That was just 3 years ago.
Wow.
Last one debuted at 76. This one debuted at 140 something.
They played where?
House of Blues.
Who did they play with?
Dwayne and Battle Beast, who were both interesting.
Okay, I've seen both of those bands before, and I was not impressed with either one. And I mean, they have fans,
right?
But I'm not one of them.
Dwayne brings a crowd.
Yeah,
it was a low crowd. It was only a couple hundred people there that night.
Really?
Yeah, weekday show. It just wasn't that.
I've seen Dwayne before. It was his Hammerfall last year.
Right,
that's who it was.
Yeah,
yeah. And Battle Beast.
And
I
don't know if you were at the Sonata Arctica Dwayne show. They've been here numerous times. They even commented on it. They're like, "Oh,
I'm looking forward to seeing Hammerfall not this coming week as we record, next week with Flotsam and Jetsam."
Yeah, that's gonna be fun.
That's on Wednesday the 20th.
Yeah,
yeah. And it's coming up Tuesday as we're recording. We're recording on a Sunday. In a couple days, get to see Insomnium do Winter's Gate in its entirety with Ocean of the Slumber opening up.
And, you know, again, going
good
back...
Good lineup.
Going back to what I was saying, the Insomnium show, I'm looking forward to this because we're all going to the show. You're going to hear Winter's Gate. It's like, that's a unique thing to hear Winter's Gate in its entirety. So the anticipation is there. Boom, that's one thing.
Because when I saw them late last year...
Yeah.
You know, they're opening for, I think it was Epica.
Right.
And some other band, I can't remember who they were, but... you know, they played songs off Winter's Gate, but they didn't play, they wanted to include other material. So
yeah,
when you have a 30-40 minute set, opening set, you're only playing two or three songs off that album. And then you need to hear that album live in its entirety. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, yeah, I agree with that. Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to that.
But, you know, we're looking forward to it. It's anticipation. When I walked up to the Camelot show that day, I kind of walked up going, like, I know the set list. All right, I'm going to just try to enjoy this. And it just didn't work. It just rolled off my back. And, like, I went to see Satyricon the other week.
How was that?
It was really fun. And you know why? Not only was I anticipating, it was, like, their last tour in the United States.
That was, like, the day after my work was over. I was like, nope, I'm dead. I'm tired.
My anticipation level was high. I was going to a new venue I'd never been before. That was
Wide Oak, right?
Fun experience. Wide Oak, nice venue.
Yes.
And then they surprised us. Like, they did stuff for that show, set list-wise. They didn't do any, like, that we didn't foresee. Like, I thought I knew the set list going in, but they played some songs they didn't have in that set list.
I love when bands do that. I love when...
And it was nice. It was like, oh, the surprise. I got the anticipation and the surprise, you know?
Some bands will do that. They're like, okay, so we played Houston one night, Austin one night, and then San Antonio the next night. I like it when they mix it up because diehard fans are going to go to all three shows.
Even if it's a song that they had introduced earlier in the tour, like 20 days before, but they bring it up for your show,
right,
it's still like, hey, that wasn't on the Setlist FM thing I saw. That's awesome.
Dave, my co-host from, we'll have him on, we talked about this more on Metal Geeks, went to the Ghost show. The evening was a Ghost show.
Yeah, I heard about that on the Metal Geeks.
Yeah, and... you know, he brought his daughter, which was great. His young daughter is a big fan. And, you know, I think her favorite song is like Square Hammer. But he was saying that he was looking up set list and I can't remember what song it was. But he's like, he was all sad because it wasn't on any of the set list that he saw. But they wound up playing it at the very end and he was like super excited.
Yeah.
Like, it's great when you can be surprised by a song like that, you know?
Anticipation or surprise. One of the two has to happen.
Iron Maiden does not do that, unfortunately. They're one of the bands that stick to their set list and that's what you're going to hear.
Fortunately for Iron Maiden, it's just your anticipation level is naturally so high. Yeah. It outweighs anything.
No.
Like, I know the set list. I know what they're going to play next, but it's still Iron freaking Maiden.
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel bad saying that about Camelot, but something's got to change. They got to do something different.
You heard it. You heard it, Camelot. Step up your game.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
The album
is not well received. It's gotten a lot of kind of like tepid response from the power metal community, and the chart position reflects that, and the show kind of reflects that. So, you know, all the sci-fi concepts you put on your album doesn't make up for the fact that you're retreading your ideas musically.
Yeah.
So
I agree. But you know who is not retreading old musical things? Our next band.
Yeah.
At the Gate.
I was surprised by this album. Yeah. I was very surprised
by this
album.
It's really good.
It's good, and it's them pushing their sound forward and At the Gate sounding... They always sound like At the Gates, but you're like hearing them do things that you've never heard them do.
They're out of their comfort zone on parts
of
this album.
Definitely out of their comfort zone.
Which is great, because it's great that they're back together and they're producing new music and they're touring and all that good stuff. But if you're going to put the same thing out over and over and over... It's really no point.
Yeah, and I wasn't entirely wild on At War With Reality.
It was a good
album, but it also just sounded like they were trying to remember what they were supposed to sound like.
Right.
And I think that with this album, the only song that really slaps you in the face as being that sounds like a classic At the Gates is the title track, which is almost like a ripoff of Blinded by Fear.
Mm-hmm.
But the rest of the album, no. It's like very different and very... like kind of challenging and stuff. And it, you know, I've heard some people say like, it took me a long time to get into this. It's like, it is definitely a different album. Some of the stuff is very mid-paced, very slow
yeah.
and swirling, like melodies and kind of,
not really doomy, but not really atmospheric. Doomy.
Atmospheric.
Yeah.
Definitely kind of a weird
yeah.
trip in some of these songs.
So let's get into it. This is a brand new At the Gate. The album is called To Drink from the Night Itself. And what's the song we're going to hear?
Palace of Wepers, which is my personal favorite song on the album.
All right, let's get into it. We'll be right back.
side voice, the light that keeps us aflame. This invalid as we bid the flood disdain, confined to the fence of knowledge. We need to die, die again.
Dimmu Borgir, Etheric, from the new album Eonian. And this came out like what, early April? So we sort of missed all the initial flurry about it, and I'm sure it's kind of all died down now. But this is just this band that, like, no matter what they release, they're always just going to get that instant criticism from people just dismissing them. And I think what's gotten lost in all of this is the fact that this is the best album they've done in well over a decade.
Agreed.
It has this old school spirit to it that kind of brings to mind Enthroned Darkness Triumphant, especially with the keyboard effects and stuff.
Let's be fair. In the last decade, they've only put out one album.
Okay, that's true. And it's been, so they did one in 2010 and 2007,
Abra,
right?
Abracadabra.
And then before that, it was in Sorte Diablo, Diabli in 2007. So, and those were very subpar albums, very confused, kind of directionless albums.
When Abracadabra, Habra, whatever it is,
right.
first came out, I made a statement. I'm like, I am not a fan of this album. I don't really like it.
I like that. I like the actual song "Dimmu Borgir," and that was the only thing I liked on that album. Yeah, it was bad, and so was In Sorte. Well, not as bad, but
there's some good stuff on that album.
You got to give them credit for like saying, you know what, I'm gonna go away, kind of refocus and reconfigure everything. This is one of the strongest albums in their catalog, and I know people are kind of slow to realize that. Because
I heard the first time I heard it, I'm like, this album is really, really good. This is top quality.
Yeah, and I've seen a few people get it, but a lot of just the response, this band, and it's like Cradle of Filth. It's like it's taking people to realize, like it's they're slow to realize that, hey, Cradle has released two really freaking good albums now. Like, stop writing them off just because you've written off their past, like, five albums or something, you know? And with Dimmu, I think this is one of those things where people are going to, as the months go on and maybe, you know...
They're going to come here on a tour. Gonna,
yeah, and you know, the thing with Dimmu, they just announced this awesome tour in Europe. Creator, co-headlining with Dimmu Borgir, Hatebreed opening with...
Bloodbath.
That's freaking amazing.
What the
amazing.
Fuck? Hatebreed doesn't really fit on that bill, but... Whatever, it's fun.
It's just it's such a weird, bizarre, creative bill.
I mean, Hatebreed, I see Hatebreed and Creator go together on a bill.
Absolutely, yeah.
And I can see Bloodbath and Dimmu Borgir together pretty well.
I just think that's ingenious to put those bands together.
Yeah,
that's
it's sort of cool.
Yeah.
I wish that would come here.
I know. I think it'd do really well here, obviously.
Oh, yeah, it would.
Yeah.
I just want to see Bloodbath once.
Yeah, that would be
that's
nice.
That's all I care about.
Yeah, maybe they will bring it here. I don't know. But yeah, this album has so much creative stuff going on. Not only, you know what they did differently from Abracadabra is they toned the orchestra stuff down and didn't drench the songs on it. It's now very focused on where they choose to put it in.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of their stuff, like the song that comes right after this on the album, The Council of Wolves and Snakes or whatever that's called.
The Ghost song.
Yeah, the one that intro sounds like Ghost. That song is very creative, has that kind of tribal drumming thing going on. And
that's the first song I heard on this album when they did like a lyric video.
Really interesting stuff. And it's like, I don't know, just there's so much good stuff about this album. It's going to, I mean, I don't see a way how it doesn't end up in my top 10 of the year. I don't know where it would be. But
when I first heard that song, I mean, I think you were here maybe. We were watching it in the video.
Right, yeah, yeah.
And I was like, I don't know what I feel about the song, but it's taking it out of context of the album. Maybe I like the album as a whole better, and that's exactly what happened.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that song, when you hear it right away, you're just like, what are you guys doing? But it does sort of fit into the weirdness of this album. Mm-hmm. When I say weirdness, it's just...
Weird in a good way.
Weird in a good way. And the thing is, I cannot stress how much I get that feeling that I had when I first heard Enthroned Darkness Triumphant. That was the first Dimmu Borgir album I ever heard. And it was just this new way of hearing black metal. And I think that they've really reached back and grabbed some of that spirit. If you've slept on this album or if you just have ignored it because it's Dimmu Borgir and you didn't like, you know, how many other past albums... This is the time to jump back in and give this a shot.
Don't
be a hater. Don't be just one of those haters.
Don't drink the Haterade.
Don't, yeah.
I saw some beer company put out Haterade. I'm like, that's perfect. do you want to talk about a topic now or do you want to get into our next band?
No, let's hit a topic. What are we talking about here? Oh, okay.
I'm leaving this up to you.
As I Lay Dying... is back.
Oh God! You had to go here.
Well, this is now. I don't care about this band. I only ever liked one song of theirs. I just think it's interesting that these guys have spoken all the in the rest of the band. They had formed this band called Woven War, and they
so without Tim, whatever his name is.
Without Tim Lambesis, yeah. And they always just kind of said no. You know, like, this guy, what he did was awful. What he did was reprehensible, and he ruined his life, and he ruined our career and stuff like that. Oh, and
now they're back together?
Now they're back, and it's just inexplicable.
How the hell is this guy out of jail?
He's been out for a while. He only served 2 years of a 6-year sentence.
Didn't he try to get his wife murdered, right?
Yeah, he tried to, yeah.
It just... The only reason it failed is because he was an idiot?
Well, the person he hired was a undercover police officer.
That's right. That's what it was.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the reason it didn't work is he was an idiot.
But what's more interesting about this story right now is the reaction it's drawing from the industry. Metal Sucks said they're not going to talk about As I Lay Dying anymore. Metal Injection today came out and said that they're strongly considering doing the same thing.
Well, they should.
Ash Avildsen from Sumerian, founder of Sumerian Records, blasted the band on Twitter, just scathing indictment of them, of like why they're doing this.
So what about the other band the guy had, which was actually sort of funny, the Austrian Dust Machine?
I don't know what's going on with that.
That was him, right?
I think so. I don't know. Are they going to get booked by promoters? Are they going to get bands to support them on tour?
No.
And are they going to, have any kind of like industry support in the way of like
tour support?
Is Metal Boy going to support them or what?
Are they still signed?
No, they released a single, but they released it independently.
Okay.
So
anything they would do would all have to be independent.
Yeah, but the striking thing is that their fan reaction has been very positive. Like, yeah, you guys are back, and it's like. I don't know. It's going to be an interesting thing to keep track of, basically. Just to see like the difference between fan reaction, welcoming them back, and going, hey, he served his time according to the eyes of the laws of justice.
She's not dead, is she?
No.
Well, that's what they're probably saying. Well, it didn't happen, so it's okay.
Right, and that he served his time, and that his sentence was commuted, still. All that kind of stuff. And it's like, and Josta tweeted, and he basically said, like, well... You know, it's only right to forgive him if the wife and kids forgive him, or if the person he tried to kill forgives him, that kind of thing. And
I guess that's a good point.
That's a good point, but, you know, he basically had ripped into the other band members for basically going back on their word and signing with them. It's like, could the paycheck be that big? I know Woven War was struggling. They weren't doing that well. But could the As I Lay Dying paycheck be that big? Who's going to be paying these guys to do these like shows? Like, what festival is going to book them? I don't understand. It just seems like a weird move for those guys to do right now. So,
I agree. I mean, it's fine if that Tim guy wants to try to get back into the metal scene and create a new band.
Right.
But there's such a stigma against him.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't understand why they would get back together with him.
It almost makes me think that, like, because it's expected that you should be against him coming back and the band reuniting, that is only pushing people
towards it
more because of this sort of society we live in.
It feels like somebody who's been beaten up by their significant other for so long, and they break up, and he's like, oh, I'm sorry, I've changed.
Right.
And they get back together, and then it's the same thing over and over. That's what it feels like.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's one way of looking at it. I think that there's something, I don't know how I feel.
The band members, here's how it is. The band members are like, Tim's like, I'm clean. I'm out of jail. I'm good. I've changed.
Right.
I told you I would change. And the band members are like, oh, we don't know, honey. You've always been the same way. No, look, I've changed. Let's get the band back together and put out music. It'll be great. You'll love it.
Well, this is interesting because, something I heard a couple weeks ago was the Aishin interview that Metal Sucks did.
Mm-hmm.
And they basically asked him, it was a really recent interview. It's a good one, too. It's on their podcast. They asked him straight up.
Metal Sucks
like,
has been in the little hot seat recently, too.
They have for various reasons. This is another one because all the As I Lay Dying fans are starting to hate them now. So anyway.
That's good then.
You can hate them all you want. If you go to their site, you're just supporting them. So, but they asked Aishin, like, you know, you invited Foss to come back on stage and play with you at some festivals.
Yeah.
How can you do that knowing what this guy did? He was in jail for killing someone, a gay man, if I remember the story right. And Aishin basically defended it by saying, he's like, you know, I understand like that perspective, but we knew him personally before he did that. We knew him growing up. You know, he was like close to us. So our perspective is going to be naturally different from your perspective, from the outside perspective. And there's nothing we can do to change that. But we feel differently about him, you know?
Okay.
And it was an interesting conversation. I encourage everyone to go look, check it out. Because
What is it? The Metal Sucks podcast?
Just look up Aishin Faust Metal Sucks podcast. Okay. Yeah. Where he talks about that kind of stuff.
I've never listened to one of their shows ever.
They do good interviews. I'll give them that.
Okay.
But for all their other editorializing, which annoys me too sometimes.
Right.
So.
Yeah. I was not going there, but okay.
So yeah, that kind of things. I was thinking about that when I was thinking about this whole As I Lie Dying issue. And like, what if it was a band that you and I liked? Like, what if it was Amorphis, you know? Like, what if Tommy Judson did something reprehensible, went away for a while, then came back to the band? Like, how do we feel about that, you know?
Yeah.
It's a hard thing to think about because you're, as a fan, your fan instinct takes over and goes, oh, I'd like to hear another album with, you know?
Yeah, and I see your point there because, yeah, your fandom, it's
very forgiving. Fandom is
well,
forgiving.
Yeah. You wear glasses with fandom. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's like okay. You're wearing like really high end sunglasses that you don't see what's really going on.
Right.
If you love a band that much,
I mean,
I can see that point.
I can see a point in the future where I could if Louis C.K. ever came back, I could find myself laughing at a joke he does. You know, in the future. Now, should I feel bad about that or not? I don't know.
What about
know.
Bill Cosby?
Nah, probably not.
We went a little too far, right?
Right, but I have laughed at
what
him.
What about
T.J.
Miller?
Yeah, I mean, if I go back and watch,
he was in Deadpool 2. They didn't cut him out completely.
Oh, okay. If I went back and watched Silicon Valley season 1 and 2, I mean, I'm gonna laugh at T.J. Miller. I'm sorry, it's just natural, right? I'm a fan of that character. So
I liked him a lot. So
yeah, everyone did.
Sucked at what's going on. Okay, moving on. Let's talk about metal again.
Okay,
let's get into the next band.
Yeah,
Alkaloid.
Yeah,
I discovered these guys through Spotify, of course.
It's a strange song name.
Yes, it's actually I think it's Azig Sauce. So yeah, let's go back here. So this is the second album they've put out called Liquid Anatomy, brand new 2018 full length. So basically it's Hans Grossman, who's the drummer, was a Necrophagist. He was in Obscura. He's in Blotted Science, all these type of, you know, tech death bands. This is his band, basically.
Okay.
And there's definitely a lot of tech death moments in this album. But it goes so far off the radar of what technical death metal is. There's a lot of clean singing. There's a lot of atmospheric moments. And it's a really cool album. I really dig it a lot.
Yeah, this little I heard was like all over the place. I was like, whoa, that's the same song?
Yeah, there's one song on this album called Rise of the Cephaloids.
Yeah.
Cephalopods.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's like 19 minutes.
Oh, okay.
The end track.
Yeah.
Such a good album. I really can't recommend it enough.
I'll have to listen to it.
It just came out May 18th. It's on Season of Mist Records. So let's get into the track. It's
Prestigioable.
It's actually called Azig Sauce. Wonder where they got that name from.
Okay.
And this is track 3 from the album called Liquid Anatomy. Check it out. We'll be right back.
insanity of living inside a black abyss we call our universe. Who are we in the light of such dimensions? Who am I to even begin to tell the tale? We are taught to rise and conquer what we see. The biosphere devours itself to stay alive. When the worms are done with what is left of us, and the atoms have regained their memory at last, the great beast that contains all matter awakens, just to find itself engulfed with a bit of singularity choking.
In the vastness all laws unfold,
rolling through chasms of unspeakability, as the size of galaxies revolve.
Returning all to our exploding vacuums. Teeth of the maelstrom. Absolute, the final inversion of the cosmos. The discontinuum unfurls. The forge of us unfolds. Forever.
Thank you.
And we have returned to episode number 207 of MSR Cast. I am Carrie the Metal Geek.
Sean the Metal Pigeon.
And we just listened to a little Finnish band called Kalma. I hope I'm saying that correctly.
Yeah, Kalma.
Kalma?
Yep.
Like a calm... Like a calm ah. There you go. So yeah, this is the brand new album called Palo. We heard the song called Take Me Away. Really fucking catchy, mellow death, Finnish mellow death. I hear a lot of guitar tones and stuff that remind me of Sentenced in this album a lot.
Yeah.
Like, totally.
Like that Sentenced / Charon type style.
Yeah. Yeah.
Very definitely. Finnish. Very Finnish guitar tone.
It's good. It's fun.
I listened to this album once through, and I guess I didn't ever remember to go back to it, but I need to go back to it and really give it some attention, because I like this band. I just, you know, they're one of those bands that always just sort of are a secondary concern, I guess, but...
Sure.
Yeah.
I think this album might take them to a new level, newer level.
Yeah, because I like this song a lot.
Yeah, it's fun.
Yeah.
And before that, we heard a band called Alkaloid. What did you think of that?
Bizarre. I'm going to have to go and listen.
Very bizarre.
I will listen to it.
I made a comment as we were listening to it again. I said something about a lot of the atmospheric stuff.
Yeah.
It came across to me, it's very Cynic. The band Cynic.
Yeah, yeah.
But there's this in that song, in particular, there's that section in the very middle where it's just like they're partaking in an incantation, and it's just slow and fucking evil.
Yeah.
And then it goes back into some of the other elements from the beginning.
Yeah.
I'm like, that is really cool.
Yeah, it's weird because like when they did that incantation type section, it's like you expect that then it's going to go crushingly heavy like right after that.
Yeah.
But it doesn't.
Right, yeah, exactly. Yeah. You almost expect a demon to actually appear out of your speakers and just jump at you.
Yeah.
It's brutal and evil. It's awesome.
Yeah.
They're such a good band. And you go, that's what I love about discovering bands that are new to me, which I hope it helps our fans and listeners discover new bands. But like these guys that have a whole another album I've never even listened to yet.
Right. Yeah.
That's always fun. You know what I mean?
Right. You heard these guys on the
Spotify release radar.
Okay. Like, yeah.
You know, I'll put that on sometimes and I'm like, all right, this is cool. This is all right. But there's that rare thing where just like you just stop. You're like, what the hell was that?
Yeah.
And this was that band for me.
The release radar playlist, like it gets automatically cobbled together based on what you listen to.
It does.
And so I listen to all sorts of random shit on Spotify. So my release radar is all over the place.
And sometimes it's not the best because like, okay, here's a band that it's Trouble. But this isn't the metal band Trouble. It's like some rapper named Trouble.
Okay,
you know
right,
what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
It doesn't really know how to differentiate between that. Because even if you look up a band like Trouble, you'll see the metal band and then you'll see like the rap band together, right, you know, yeah. Whatever. But yeah, another band that I discovered that way, and I know we helped turn a lot of people onto, is Aeternum.
Right, yeah.
And you just saw these guys live. Let's talk about your concert experience.
Yeah, I went on, a couple weeks ago, I went to Austin on a Friday.
I wish I could have been there. And thank you so much.
Memorial Day weekend Friday.
It was, I was working that evening, Memorial Day weekend. But thank you so much for the Orphan Land t-shirt, the concert shirt.
No problem. I felt bad that you couldn't be there.
I can pretend that I was there now.
Yeah.
How was the show? I was fucking awesome, man. Look at my shirt.
Yeah. I mean, I'll say this. It was a spectacular concert. It really was amazing.
So talk about the lineup.
It was Tyr headlining. Orphan Land got a good 55 minutes, I'd say.
Oh, cool.
Then Ghost Ship Octavius was the... And then Aeternum was the opening band.
Oh, Aeternum was the opening.
Yeah.
I thought it would be the other way around.
No. Aeternum played 5 songs. Ghost Ship played like 7, I think.
Okay. It was pretty decent.
I drove to Austin to do it. First of all, let me tell you something. Getting out of Houston at 3 p.m. on a Friday is fucking insane because there's traffic leading outside the city on I-10. I was doing 30 miles an hour on Interstate 10 going west out of the city until I hit Sealy. Now, if you're not in Texas and you're right, it's just a long time.
Yes.
To be going.
And you would think
it's
3 o'clock is before rush hour.
No, no.
2 o'clock is when rush hour starts in Houston.
It's, and so finally, when I hit Sealy, all of a sudden traffic starts going like ahead, and I'm like, oh, there must be some accident ahead, like that we're about to pass. No, there was no accident. It was just too many cars on the road. There was nothing there.
Right.
So I get to Austin at like I don't know, close to 7. Go right to the venue. And
who'd you go with? Were you by yourself?
By myself. Like, no one could
go.
Fuck. Yeah, no one could go.
If I wasn't busy that weekend, I would have definitely been there with you.
And I was like looking around for people. I mean, because the thing about going to Austin is that after that show that night, I've done that thing where you go to Austin, you see a show that night, and you drive back to Houston right away. Yeah. That sucks because I fall asleep a lot. Like,
right.
You know, I drift
off. Did you drive back that night?
Interesting story about that. So after the show, my plan was to just kind of like crash in my car somewhere because I was like looking around for rooms in Austin, but weekend rates in Austin are ridiculous. They're like $100 for a room. I'm not paying $100 for 7 hours. I'll sleep in my car somewhere. So there was I just kind of was like, you know, asking around and stuff. And someone said, hey, there's an apartment complex right next to the venue. This venue called Come and Take It Live. It's in the strip center in Southeast Austin. The apartment complex is built on this hill. There's no gates, and there's all these visitor spaces. Just go in the visitor space, park there, fall asleep. He was right. I went there after the show. I stumbled into my car, and I was like really tired and kind of probably shouldn't have been on the road. And so I just kind of like drove the 10, you know, like the I don't know, 50 yards or so up to this apartment complex and parked there and like fell asleep for a couple hours. And so it was a weird situation, like waking up in the middle of the night, like all these noises in this apartment complex, kind of like looking around like, wait, where am I? Oh, I'm in Austin. Right. And just like forgetting where you were. And then like finally, like at some point in the middle of the night, like 2 a.m., 3 a.m. or something like that, drove, got some food, went over to this other town 30 minutes outside of Austin where there's a Buc-ee's. If you don't know what a Buc-ee's is, Buc-ee's are these things you can easily make fun of. But when you're driving around at 3 a.m. and you see a Buc-ee's, it's like a godsend. It's like the greatest place
in
the world.
It's like the oasis in the desert.
Huge-ass gas station, like 40 pumps, the cleanest bathrooms you'll ever imagine.
Oh, yeah. Fuck yeah.
And like all this, like these foods and snacks you
can
have.
They have like a full restaurant type food in there.
Yeah.
And they have all these exclusive things that they have in there. But I mean, it's like one of the cleanest
stops you ever go to. It's like
if you're ever in Texas, you need to go.
It's a Texas-sized convenience store.
Yeah.
Where you can get, if you're like on the ketogenic diet, you can buy like hard-boiled eggs there.
You can.
I mean, it's just like they have anything you can want there. Anyway.
One of my favorite things to get there is, I love Rice Krispies. They make Rice Krispies out of Fruity Pebbles.
They're huge, too.
They are.
They're like bricks.
Yeah. Like, they're solid, too.
Yeah, so I went to this Buc-ee's in this town, like 30 minutes outside of Austin, and I went there, and I was like, and I crashed again. I went to sleep again, and this parking lot where there's just like all these cars like off to the edges, and you're like, oh, everyone's sleeping, and the cops who are standing like right there, just like talking, they don't care because I think they'd rather just go to sleep rather than be on the road.
Right, exactly right.
So anyway,
it's like a rest stop, you know?
Yeah. So I woke up at like 4 a.m. and I was like, I walk into the Buc-ee's, I get some coffee, get some stuff, and then finally make it back to Houston. It was like the right way to do it, even though it was like a totally weird experience. I get back to Houston at like 6 a.m. or anyway, so weird time after that. But the show itself, Aeternum was so good live. They were so vicious, like just the brutality. No one knew who they were. Like people in the audience, these guys behind me were like before the band or before the show started, they're like, who's the opening band? And like they don't know anything about them. Me and this other guy were the only two people up front, like really into them. And then everyone else sort of like as they started playing, got into them and moved up with us. And they played 5 songs, just so good. They almost threatened to steal the night. But just the fact that Orphanland was in my face and I was seeing them live, that kind of just overshadowed
everything.
Was this
your first time seeing Orphanland?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I saw them. The only time they've ever toured here before was with Fitzgerald in Houston.
Yeah.
With, I can't remember who they were on that tour with.
It was a weird bill.
Who was that? It might have been Catatonia. Yeah, yeah. She's right. The voice from the other room is saying Catatonia.
Yeah.
I want to say Devin, like Strapping Young Lad or something like that.
Huh.
I don't remember. I have to look it up.
Yeah. They were the opener band. They were the opening band.
Yeah.
Band. Yeah. They were so good live. They had a belly dancer on stage with them who I found out later, the belly dancer, who didn't look familiar to me, but it's been a while since I had seen her. I know her. She was the keyboardist in Plutonian Shore.
Really?
A black metal band from San Antonio. Yeah. And she was the belly dancer that they had hired. They're hiring out like local belly dancers wherever they can to come on stage during Sabari, which is the single off the Never Ending Way album. And when that song was playing, she was up there doing this dance, and he was off to the side singing, and it was just this great thing. They're such a great, like, celebratory live band, and there were people in the audience. This was definitely a tier crowd. I would say 80% of the people were there for tier, and there was, like, this contingent of us who were Orphanland fans. And I heard some comments in the crowd. They were sort of like, I was like, ah, I hope this is not one of those types of crowds who's, like, anti, you know, Israeli-Jewish band or whatever, and... But just you get some skeptical people going like, oh, I'm going to, you know, go get a beer during Orphanland. I heard these guys behind me talking. And sure enough, the band's playing they're playing live. And I turned around. Those guys are right behind me. And they're into it. So like whatever reservations they had were melted away by the performance of the band.
It was Swallow the Sun that played with that tour.
Right, right. Okay.
Catatonia, Orphanland, Swallow the Sun.
Yeah. Good bill.
Was my first experience with Swallow the Sun,
too. I regret missing that show. I'm so glad I got to see him live. And then after the show, you know, he announced, he's like, hey, we're going
to
be by the merch booth afterwards.
Did you
so
get
to meet him? I went and talked to all five of the guys.
Do you anything autographed or anything like that?
No, I didn't want to bother him, but I was like starstruck. And I even told Kobe, I was like, I'm a little starstruck. I don't normally get like this. He's like, oh, it's all right. And it was cool. And I ran into, I don't know how to pronounce his name, Ashri from Aeternum.
Yeah, okay.
Or Ashrei or whatever.
They're from Israel too, right?
No, I think he's from Syria or Egypt or something, but lives in Canada now. The band's from Canada.
Right.
He came from, originally from, I think, Egypt, maybe. Anyway, but I met him in this hallway of the venue. Weird venue, by the way. Weirdly arranged venue.
I think I've been there before.
And he was cool, and I shook his hand and talked to him and told him I was, like, blasting Moon God the entire way up there. He's like, it's cool. And he said that, you know, band's trying to make it work with the schedules, having the day jobs, all that kind of stuff. And so I'm glad – I have a feeling, like, I'm glad I caught them on this tour because I don't know when those guys are going to be able to hit the road again. It's got that kind of vibe from them. So
if you're interested, you can go back to MSRcast episode 139 – and listen to our interview we did with Orphanland with Kobe.
That was a good interview. I remember that episode.
He was really nice. I really need to get back into doing more interviews. I have the equipment. I just have not had the time.
Rusty Connor was there doing an interview with Tier.
Oh, really?
I ran into him, and he told me about that. Yeah, it was cool.
Very cool.
In fact, I think he posted a picture on Instagram of him and Henry. And, you know, I was expecting the whale protesters at the show.
Oh, yeah.
Because they were there in Portland, and I figured in Austin there's got to be some... Some protesters didn't show up.
How were Tier?
Tier were fun. They.
Did you hold your heathen hammer high?
You know, I sort of went. I was in the front for Aeternum and Orphanland. I sort of retreated to the back for Ghost Ship and for Tier. But Tier were great. Professional as always. Good show. I was so tired by that point. It was hard for me to stay into it.
Yeah.
But they played like every song you want them to play. And nice. It was a great set. And they even did some like a ZZ Top with a little like cover for like 2 minutes or whatever.
Oh, weird.
Wore the cowboy hats, the whole Texas thing, you know?
Nice.
So, yeah, they were fun. Yeah.
All right, let's get into, we're going to play something from Aeternum.
Yes.
From Moon God.
It's so vicious. I love this song so much. They played this live, and I was going nuts for it.
Nice.
Actual headbanging right up against the front, right in front of the guitarist, just headbanging like I was 18 or something. So.
Nice. That's why your neck is in a brace right now, right?
Yeah.
So let's get into it. This song is called Hubal, Profaner of Light from Moon God. Here's some Aeternum.
Thank you.
Welcome back to episode 207.
What's up, Moon God?
I love that song.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's this part in the, at the end of that song where it just gets very, not quite a breakdown, but it's just like a this thrashy progression of riffs. And it, I just, it's one of the most incredible moments of that band, of all of their albums. But Roy Khan's coming back. He's one of the things that happened between the last episode and now is the reunion announcement of Conception. And
Concept is pronounced Concepcion.
Concepcion. And I'm excited about this. I never thought this would happen, honestly. I just there were rumors like about like a month and a half ago about like him being seen. I think we even talked
you
about
talked
the
about
podcast.
That. Some guy saw him climbing out a window or something.
Or yeah, like they were like he was like lingering by their rehearsal space or some rehearsals thing where he heard them singing. It's like, oh, okay, I wonder what's going on. Like maybe they're just doing this for fun. Because there was never any indication they were supposed to get back together. But now it's this whole thing. They have a Pledge music campaign. They have an EP they're working on. And just, I don't know, just it's incredible. They just did an interview that went up on Blabbermouth today, I think. Interesting interview where he talked about how, the religion, his religiosity is not going to impact the songwriting or anything.
What religion is he?
Well, when he left Camelot, he went to join a church, like a Christian church, where he worked at the church for a while as like a youth director, singer, and stuff like that. And so I think a lot of people, when he wrote that statement that he was leaving Camelot, he talked about that a little bit. And so people kind of thought, oh, the church pulled him away from the metal. But I don't know. Okay. I don't think it's now in retrospect, it's like maybe that's not true. Maybe it was right. Just, maybe he was just tired of being in the band, basically. So,
well, he saw where they were going. That's the good news for you, though.
Well, I'm just glad he's back, like regardless of the fact that he's not back with Camelot, I'll take him back anyway. Just start singing, man, So, I'm excited about that. Yeah.
Very cool. You know what I'm excited about?
What's that?
Our next set of music.
Yeah.
It's about to get doomy in here.
About to get very dark.
So, I'm a huge fan of the band Trouble. More specifically, I'm a fan of their ex-vocalist, a guy named Eric Wagner. Mm-hmm. I was able to see the Skull here live last year at this event. And they were supposed to tour here in April. Got postponed because the drummer couldn't get the visa to get into the States and that typical bullshit. And they've rescheduled some shows, but not Houston yet. So
right.
They have a new album coming out in September called The Endless Road Turns Dark. And I wanted to jam a little Skull. Of it's weird when something has a title of the in front of it, so like the Avengers or the Defenders or the Skull, you don't say I'm going to watch the Defenders, you say I'm going to watch Defenders,
right?
But it actually is the Defenders, or yeah. Oh, I'm going to listen to Skull. But it's really the Skull.
Conversely, when a band doesn't have the like Scorpions,
yeah,
it's just Scorpions, not the Scorpions. But everyone else says the Scorpions. So
that is very true.
Weird.
What is up with the in
what's
metal?
What's up with our minds? Yeah,
I know, right? All right. Now we need to compare like what bands we like to like Ice Cream Again or some shit.
Yeah,
refresh it.
Yeah.
So yeah, this is a upcoming album called The Endless Road Turns Dark. They were super cool dudes. I was starstruck when I met him. I was just like, because when I first, I think we talked about this on the show, when I first saw him before they played, he didn't really give a shit. But he saw me like when they played, I was like front of the stage singing all the lyrics and shit. And after that, he was like my best friend. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He was cool. He's like, because I was like, what shirts do you have? What records do you have? What vinyl? I want everything signed. And he's like, dude, I'll take care of you. It was really super cool.
Yeah.
It was a good show. That's why I was excited for them to come back. They were supposed to play White Oak Music Hall.
Yeah.
Hopefully they'll be able to reschedule that date.
Have you been to that venue?
I have. Only once.
I like it.
I went to the Oceans of Slumber record release party.
Okay, yeah.
But it was upstairs. I haven't been downstairs to the main venue yet.
Okay, yeah. I was downstairs. Yeah, it was a good venue. But what I really like is the bar, like almost on the property, the Moon Tower bar, or whatever that's called, or the Raven Tower.
Oh, I think
it's called the Raven Tower.
I didn't go there.
It actually is this tower that goes up. Right. You can't actually walk up.
And they also have a an area outside.
Yeah.
Sort of like a little grassy knoll area with a live stage. That's where Alice Cooper is going to be playing here soon. A bunch of bands play outside, too.
They still do shows out there? Because I thought that the neighborhood had some problems.
I don't know.
I mean, because there's like houses like right across the street.
Oh, yeah. It's in the middle of, middle of a neighborhood, which is weird.
Yeah. Nice place, though.
Let's get into the skull, and then we have something else doomy coming up after that.
Oh yeah,
let's. We'll be right back.
We'll be right back.
Candlemas.
Okay. Is that how you have to pronounce it now? You have to say it like that. Candlemas.
Some old Transylvanian butler.
Right. Exactly right. They, you know where that butler lives?
Where?
In the House of Doom?
Yeah.
Yeah, more Candlemas for your listening pleasure, guys. Small EP, a couple new songs, like a live thing and all that kind of stuff. I freaking love Matt Levin's in this band.
Yeah.
Matt Levin.
Yeah.
I always get that mixed up.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, I mean, it sounds great. It's one of the catchiest songs I've heard from this band in ever, I think.
Yeah, definitely. I think Matt Levin being in the band has really invigorated them. I wish they'd work on a full-length album instead of they put out a couple of EPs here and there.
Yeah, I wonder why that is. Why it's just the EPs.
I don't know.
Not the album. You remember a long time ago, I don't know if you remember this, but The Cult a long time ago, after they had done this album in 2001, and it was a long time before they did another album in 2007, that album kind of tanked. Born into this. So after that, Ian Astbury said, no more albums. Like, clearly fans don't care about albums. We're going to do these things called capsules, where maybe it's like one or two songs and some multimedia stuff and or some kind of video project. They did like two capsules and that whole thing just kind of fizzled out and they released an album later on.
Like, right. Yeah, of course.
There were some bands who always got into this thing of like, if the album's dead, we're not going to do them, but we'll just do a couple songs. Like Smashing Pumpkins tried to do this. It doesn't work. The album is the format. Like, EPs are cool, like, every once in a while, but don't make a habit of it. You know, just get a fucking album out already, you know?
Well, EPs are supposed to help promote an album.
Or just be like a stopgap thing, like the thing that Ghost did, you know, with the Square Hammer EP or whatever, Pope Star. So, I mean, it's supposed to be like an interim thing, something cool, you know?
Or Panicky Fessin.
Right, yeah.
You know what that is, right?
What's that?
Panicky Fessin?
Panicky Fessin.
Panicky Fessin.
No. Sounds like you're having a stroke.
It's Anthrax put the EP out.
Oh, okay.
Say it backwards. Panicky Fessin.
Okay.
Try to say it backwards.
Panicky Fessin.
You know the song NFL Evil Nicky Fessin?
Okay.
You know what that stands for?
No.
NFL Nice Fucking Life?
Huh.
So... Panicky Fessin is Nice Fucking EP.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Somewhat clever.
I have a weird ability to be able to look at stuff or hear something and make it backwards in my mind.
That is not a skill I have.
I don't know why I can do that. I've always been able to do that.
Yeah. That's weird. But yeah, EPs.
All right, nice.
Very nice EPs.
No, your name backwards is nice.
Really?
Yeah. N-A-E-S.
Oh, okay. Yeah, nice. I guess that's true.
I don't know. I don't know why I have this ability.
That's strange.
It is very strange. It's never come in handy in my life at all.
I can't imagine why.
Except for reading those Anthrax song titles and the EP title.
Right.
That's it.
Maybe Wheel of Fortune or something?
Never seen to come up in Wheel of Fortune.
Okay. Strange.
Yeah. I don't think I've ever said that publicly.
Learn new things every day.
That's
about
true. All right, moving on.
Yeah.
What strange abilities do you have?
Strange abilities. Oh, I can remember. I can figure out how to get to a place. Like, I'd never been to the White Oak Music Hall. I just sort of like heard about where it was, figured out where it was. And was able to navigate my way towards that.
It's called Waze.
No, I don't use any things. I don't use any... I just kind of like know if I'm... if that venue is in relation to this downtown Houston, then as long as I know where downtown is, I can figure out where that is.
Okay, that's weird.
Or as long as I know that Fitzgerald's is over here and this venue is supposed to be a little bit over here near Fitzgerald's, I can figure out where it is because I know where I am in relation to that. So I have that. That's the only thing I have.
Okay. That's something.
Yeah.
All right. Moving on. Candlemas. And before that, we heard The Skull, The Endless Road Turns Dark, upcoming album. What'd you think of that?
I like it. I like that little The Skull does that weird thing where it's like that reverse breakdown, where it's not really a breakdown. It's like an old school breakdown. Where
yeah.
It's like, bum, 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 you know? Yeah, it's great. I love it.
Yeah. They're a great band. I'm a big fan of his vocal.
And, you know, maybe the fact that tour got, like, the visa issues happens, like, is a good thing in the end, because now they're going to come back after this album's out, and you'll be able to hear some of the new stuff, yeah. Incorporate, not the same old set. So maybe it'll be a good thing.
So I think it's time, it's part of the show, the time of the show where we need to get a little sad.
Yeah,
there's been some deaths in the past week that I really wanted to, we needed to just sort of talk about.
It sucks that we have to do this so often.
I know. So we're going to pay tribute to a legendary guitar player. But before that, I want to say, talk about Anthony Bourdain a little bit.
Yeah.
I am a huge fan of Anthony Bourdain.
Yeah. So I would consider myself that as well.
I think everybody is. He was such an amazing dude. He was unapologetic about his beliefs and his thoughts and his ideas. His shows are No Reservation than the what's the one
Parts
on
Unknown.
Parts Unknown are two of the best shot, edited shows I've ever seen on TV. I was always in awe of those episodes because
yeah.
The shots were so beautiful. His ideas. He never looked at anything as sort of black and white. So, like, even the episodes where he was here in Houston, I just rewatched that one this week and right after he passed away.
Yeah,
He looks at things in different type of glasses, type of deal. So, what I would think, you know. It's Houston. It's just about food. No, he talked about all the cultures that are living here and how it's this big melting pot. And there was this whole thing about Lee High School, which is no longer there anymore. We just drove by that area yesterday, and it's not there. How all these kids were learning ESL, and that was their big focus, is to help kids, you know, survive in Houston. But even he went to some really scary places, and the whole purpose of his shows were food was the common denominator between all races, all genders, all everything. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And he is an amazing writer too.
That's what I was going to say. Like I first got into him by reading Kitchen Confidential.
Yep. Me too.
Like that was my first exposure. It was, I didn't even know he was doing a show. And,
right.
I remember someone that I worked with a long time ago told me, like, you should really check this book out. Like, and so I read it, and it was, you know, that book is hugely influential for a whole number of reasons you'll probably read about, like, on the internet now. But he was a great writer, you know, not just a TV guy. But
I just picked up today at the local comic book store. He has put out new series. There's four issues, and I picked up all four. I was like, I grabbed
the I'd never seen the comic books, no.
I can't think of what it's called, but he also had another series. There's two volumes called Get Jiro.
Right, yeah, I think I've heard
Check
of that.
Check those out. They're really good. But he was a big fan of murder mystery type of crime noir type books.
Yeah, he wrote some.
He wrote a couple. Yeah. I've read one of them, and he was such a phenomenal writer.
Yeah, he was great, effortless. Yeah,
he if there's anybody in this world that I wanted to look up to and strive to be, it was him.
Yeah.
And if anybody's listening to this show, if you this is I've never really done this before, but if you're feeling lost, you're feeling alone, you're feeling suicidal or any of those type of things, there is help for you out there. There's people you can talk to, help you through. There's a suicide hotline. I'm going to pull that number up. If you're feeling that way, please reach out. I typed in suicide and the first thing that came up was Suicide Squad. That's not what I'm looking for. It's 1-800-273-8255, the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline.
Yeah, and the thing is, right before I came over here, I was watching the news, and they were talking about some more details they had learned about what happened to him, and he sort of, I don't know, I guess he had missed dinner or breakfast or something that day, And that's what kind of alerted them to. But he said something on the. They played a clip of one of his recent shows where he talked about, like, he was in this great garden eating a meal and stuff. And the narration of his narration was talking about how he was alone and stuff like that. And, like, is it really. Can you really enjoy this amazing meal if you're alone? That kind of thing. It was kind of like foreshadowing something.
Oh, wow.
And so they were playing that clip. It was on CNN or whatever. And so, I don't know. I just feel like that. Because everyone's first reaction that I talked to that day was, oh, he had such an amazing life. Like, you look at the job he had. Like, you know, that's not everything. And
a lot of people think that people think that money, fame, popularity is going to fix all that
stuff.
Look
at Chester Bennington, you know, like all that stuff.
Who's that? Kate Spade.
Kate Spade. She
she had so much money from her, with a purse line, fashion line, empire, and all that kind of stuff. And that type of stuff doesn't matter. It's superficial. It's no matter how much money or fame or whatever you have in life, if you are feeling alone and you become depressed and suicidal, reach out.
Yeah.
You're not alone.
I mean, the Robin Williams, it's like these people who give so much to people, like through Bourdain, through writing, through television, these awesome shows we all love, you know, they're giving so much, and clearly there's a void within these people. The thing that shocked me about this entire affair, about this entire Bourdain situation, is that I always knew he was popular. I think, like, oh yeah, a lot of people like Anthony Bourdain. I didn't realize how popular he was. Like every celebrity you can imagine is, like, grief stricken and talking about how they, you know, like, they're big fans of his, and, like, there's people in the news. And my dad, I was talking to him today, and he's like, yeah, I'm really gonna miss that guy. I really liked his show, and, like, I had played him some shows, like some Parts Unknown from Bourdain, and he became sort of a fan, but I always just figured it was, like, something he liked to watch in passing. Never was, like, you know, never really felt one way or another about Anthony Bourdain. But he was saying, like, yeah, I'm really going to miss that guy. That really sucks. I was like, wow.
It does.
He never says stuff like that. This is my dad talking. I was like, wow.
He was very personable, just from watching him in his shows and all that kind of stuff. He felt like, I would go hang out with this dude, drink a beer, eat some food, and just have a good conversation.
Yeah. I had to be the one to break it to this friend of mine, Kit, who he is a hardcore Anthony Bourdain fan, loves everything. He has those graphic novels. He went to see him when he came here with Eric Ripert.
Yeah.
And they did that talking show or whatever.
I wish I'd gone to that.
He was and I had to be the one to break it to him that morning. I was like, hey, how you doing, buddy? And he's like, I'm fine. What's up? I'm like, you didn't hear the news? And I had to tell him. And the look on his face was crestfallen, anger, disbelief. It looked like he wanted to hit me at first.
This same thing happened to me. My wife woke up, I guess, before I did the morning of. And my alarm went off to get ready to go for work and all that. And she leaned over and she's like, hey, have you looked at social media yet? I was like, no. She's like, well, let me be the one to tell you then. I was like, fuck.
I tell you, the social media reveal is the worst. And I learned because I was driving and sports radio was talking about it. They interrupted what they were talking about to talk about it. And they spent the next 20 minutes, these sports radio guys, talking about how they loved him. And they were talking about the Houston show that he did. So, like, that was the thing. Like, all these people that I never thought would be Bourdain fans, everyone loved that guy. That's a takeaway from me.
So the series that I picked up today, if you can find it, it's really cool. Here's a little description of it. It's a 4-issue comic horror series. Hungry Ghost is the name of it. Working with novelist Joel Rose, Bourdain's Hungry Ghost begins at a party full of chefs who play a game called 100 Candles, which is a Japanese game thought to be used to test a samurai's courage. The game involves telling spooky stories, so naturally Hungry Ghost isn't for the faint of heart, and Bourdain's culinary influence gives the stories a twist. So
that's cool.
Yeah, hardcover will come out in October, but I saw them at the comic book store today. I was like, all 4 issues are sitting on the shelf. I'm like, I got to buy these.
Yeah, everyone should go out and get a copy of Kitchen Confidential and read that. That was a great book.
Yeah, Kitchen Confidential. If you're looking for his comic book stuff, get Jiro, and there was a sequel, Blood and Sushi. Both. I haven't read the sequel yet. I need to read that.
Yeah.
Both great. It was a great. It's a great series.
What a bummer!
All right,
that one hit me hard. Yeah,
me too, dude.
That one and the Dolores O'Riordan one really knocked me sideways this year.
So we also lost Ralph Santola last week.
Yeah,
I know he was sick for a little bit, and then he was in a coma, and they finally his family decided they took him off the off life support because he was basically no quality of life. There's no.
I've
been in that situation. I've had to make that decision before, and it's not easy. But I wanted to pay some respect to Ralph Santola. I've seen him live before with Ice Durs, and he is a phenomenal guitar player,
metal lifer. Guy's been around in the scene forever.
So. Yeah, so just some of the bands he's been in. He was in Deicide for 10 years, from 2006 to 2016. Hollow, Memorian, I don't know that band. Obituary, he was in Obituary from 2007 to 2009.
People forget about that little Obituary stint.
Yeah, I know, right?
Yeah.
Sebastian Bach, he did stuff with him. That band Toxic. The band we're going to play here in a few minutes, a band called Millennium, that he played guitars and keyboards in this band. It was like late 90s adult or AOR type stuff.
Right, yeah.
I had never heard it, but it's really, really good.
Huh, okay, I have to go back and check that out.
Yeah, but, you know, he was a touring member of Death for a while. Well, that's how we got his like main name out there. You know what I mean? I forgot he was in Melakesh for a while.
I didn't know that. No.
Yeah. Iced Earth. Yeah. So,
he was in Iced Earth for just a few years, right? From like, cause I think I saw him live. I want to say.
Yeah. So on The Glorious Burden, he did the lead guitar on the album. He wasn't a full-fledged member of the band, but okay. He did tour with him on that album cycle.
That's right, because I remember, I did see him
on that's the
tour.
One with Ripper, of course.
Right, yeah.
I did go to that tour.
Yeah.
That was at the Engine Room? Who was on? Do you remember who else was that?
Yeah, Trodden the Boat and Hypocrisy.
It was the
craziest metal show of my life.
That's right,
just
it was.
Just insane.
So let's get into a trilogy of songs from Ralph Santola. We're going to start off with his band called Millennium. I don't think you've ever heard this before.
Nope.
So this will be a first for you. I am really into it. Then we're getting into some Iced Earth, Red Baron, Blue Max. I love his guitar solo on that song.
That's a great song.
From The Glorious Burden, and then we're going to get into Deicide, To Hell With God. And then we'll be back after this.
Yep.
Everybody, take care of yourselves and keep it metal.
Keep it metal.
All right, be right back.
Stare into these eyes, my blue Madonna, a bitter serenade. Hold on to this picture of a woman who cried while music played. Remember when we heard the bell, it rang for us, we knew it well, and now we know our dream of love has died.
And yeah, so it's hard to come back after a set like that where you're having to pay homage to somebody who recently just passed away. So to all his friends and fans and family, our condolences here from MSR Cast and Metal Geeks. He will definitely be missed in the metal scene.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so anything else you wanted to talk about? You gave me some topic points, and I want to make sure we cover everything. We can talk about some of the albums we missed, maybe?
Yeah, okay, just really quickly, because, I mean, there's so much to say about these albums, but...
Sure.
Some of the things that came out in early April, obviously we just don't have enough time to cover them, but I really like the new Panopticon album, and it's this is the band that they're from. It's like, well, one guy originally from Kentucky, was in Minnesota now, I think, and he does like black metal with kind of an Appalachia sound to it.
Sure.
The new album that he did was really good. He released this album kind of without warning too. It just appeared one day on Bandcamp. First disc is like his black metal sound mixed with kind of like a, you know, Appalachian folk type stuff. The second disc is just all folk music, kind of like almost alt country Appalachian folk. Really good, worth investigating. It is a long album, but it's a rewarding album. Give it a shot on Spotify. Also, the new Winterfelleth is an all acoustic album.
I have that on my to listen to list right now. I have not yet.
It's really good. It's not. If you wanted a standard Winterfelleth album, it's not what you're expecting, obviously. Really? But it's very stark, sparse folk music, and it's interesting. I'm still not sure what to make of it. I like parts of it, and some parts I need just to listen to it more. Also, the new Kruaken album, legendary folk metal band, been around forever. New album's really good, really punchy, really to that core classic sound that they're known for. And if you don't know who they are, they're from Dublin. Before Primordial was the Irish metal flag bearers, there was this band, and they have been going since the early 90s, and they release good albums. But I sort of, you know, they're just like Calma. They drift away from my radar a little bit, and then they come back on, and they're coming back at the right time, because this album is definitely one everyone should check out.
9 years of blood.
9 years of blood. Yeah, I mean, and it's just weird. Like, three folk metal-ish albums, different kinds of folk metal, very different from each other. And it's reinforcing this thing I was talking about last year, like harping on last year, about how I really think folk metal is going through this quiet resurgence of really good artistic folk metal. So it's out there, and all these bands are doing it.
I've been listening to different things. The brand new Fragment of Unbecoming. I think you would really dig those guys a lot.
I need to remember that name, because it's a long name and I'll probably forget it. Fragments of Unbecoming. I'm gonna add that.
I listened to the new Don Airy album.
How was that?
It's fun. It's okay. Good. You know who he is, right?
Yeah. Is he just playing keyboards, and is he singing?
I don't know if he's singing or not, but it's maybe a little bit better than the last Deep Purple album. It's pretty fun.
Okay, I didn't even listen to the last Deep Purple album.
Midnight Soul.
Yeah.
That's a great album. I've been listening to that one a little bit.
Yeah.
Getting into that.
I heard the video track they did.
I got turned on to this band from the drummer guy, Josh, a band called Subsignal. I think you would really dig them.
Okay, I've heard the name before, I think.
Of course, do you want to talk about the new Ghost at all?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I can't believe I forgot about that. What I want to say is this, because I know there's all this talk about like whether it's a, you know, like, there's people who are Ghost fans who are upset about the new album being super poppy. And my contention is this. They've always been poppy. Where were you? And why didn't you see this coming?
Yeah.
This band is getting increasingly popular. You saw the reaction at the Maiden show.
Yep.
Popestar EP debuted at number 15 on the charts. The new album's going to debut in the top 5. This is a big band now. They're going to be playing big theaters, possibly small arenas in the United States. Get ready for everyone to love this band. If that upsets you, you should have known this already. This band has a gimmick that attracts attention. They're not doing it for people to look away from them, that's for sure. And they have a sound that's appealing. and they could only do the Blue Oyster Cult type thing long enough. This album has so many cuts that remind me of classic 80s Scorpions, Dance Macabre. That song could have been on Savage Amusement, 1985 Scorpions. Yeah, I mean, it is down to the way his voice sounds just like Klaus Meiner in that song, mm-hmm. and the lyrical matter. That's a Scorpion song. If I played that song for you and didn't tell you it was Ghost and told you this is like a Scorpions B-side off the Savage Amusement record, you'd be like, oh, okay, yeah, it sounds like the Scorpions.
First time I heard that song, I was like, it sounds like Scorpions.
And you know what? There's other tracks that sound like the Scorpions, and yeah. kudos to Tobias Forge for doing that, for changing his sound a little bit and just becoming more...
So he moved from Blue Oyster Cult, meets King Diamond... to the Scorpions.
Yeah. And
he just went up a decade.
And, you know, I'm glad you mentioned the King Diamond, because what is Rats? What is the chorus on that song, if not a little bit of King Diamond echoing through? Yes. I mean, come on, guys.
If nothing, this dude knows how to write catchy fucking songs. Not everyone's an earworm right. on this album.
It's amazing that, I mean, the thing is, you know, this is the first band from Sweden to really make a big splash in America since... like a big commercial splash since freaking Europe. And it's a good thing that they're becoming this popular. This is a good thing for metal and rock. We need this band to be big, to fill arenas, to keep that thing going, you know? So don't just... I know some people who are big Ghost fans of the last album. Especially, I'm calling there out, Kat, friend of mine. She loved the last album.
Okay.
Loved the band. This album is all of a sudden too poppy for her. It's like... I don't understand this attitude. I don't get what the complaint is.
Here's what I'm going to say about the album. It's a good album. It's a decent album. I don't love it. I don't love it like I did the last album, which was super catchy. Here is just three or four songs that I find are catchy as hell. The rest of it's sort of forgettable in ways.
One too many instrumentals on yes. the album. Unnecessary. I'm not a big enough Ghost fan. I just enjoy them for what they are. I wouldn't call myself a super fan or even a fan. But what I'll say is that my perspective on this, I understand maybe a hardcore Ghost fan will be like, no, the second album was the best one. Okay, I respect that. It's a fandom thing. But when I'm telling casual fans and just people who are just metal fans, like I saw these debates on Facebook about, like, should we call Ghost heavy metal or not? It's like, guys... this is 2018. Why are we talking about this? You know what the answer to this question is. They're a hard rock band. They're an arena rock band.
They are now.
Who cares if they're metal or not? It's irrelevant. It's like arguing about whether Metallica's thrash metal still. Does it really matter? No, it doesn't really matter. They sell out stadiums. That's the only thing that really matters. And they're Metallica. That's the only thing that really matters. This is Ghost. I mean, they're not... whether they're metal or not is irrelevant to the entire brand and albums and music and discussion. As if them being metal is going to somehow make you say it's okay for them to be liked by you. I don't. That's that the line of questioning. So I've just seen these people who I consider friends of mine talking about stuff like this, and I'm just like, haven't we had this discussion a million times in the past, in the 80s and the 90s, about these same topics that we pretty much now are, we should be over, like, we should all be over this. If a band becomes successful, we should support that. You know, like you and I, we talk about metal on this podcast, and we don't go out of our way to argue about whether a band like Five Finger Death Punch should be called metal or not. It's irrelevant. Some people consider them metal, some people consider them whatever. Well,
they are metal. It's just not the metal that we listen to.
Right. And
that's all that fucking matters.
And that's all that matters. And the thing is, like, I'm glad that they're successful. And I'm glad that Bullet for My Valentine's successful. And I'm glad for all these other, you know, Slipknot, whatever, being successful. Because someone has to be successful from our genre, you know?
Well, not only that, these bands, like you said, so Ghost gets popular. People are going to be like, oh, I've never really heard something like this before.
Yeah, the gateway band.
What else can I discover that's in this type of genre?
Precisely. That's the same, main thing.
Same with the band, whatever band, Five Finger Death Punch. Okay, what bands sort of sound like this that I can get into? They're going to find other bands. They're going to start getting the Hatebreed, and right. then the Hatebreed will talk about their influences, and then they'll start discovering death metal, and they'll start discovering all these things that they didn't really know about because they were never around it.
And I saw on Reddit some salty Soilwork fans talking about how they're upset about Bjorn spending so much time on a Night Flight Orchestra.
I fucking love Night Flight.
Like, guys, if they discover Bjorn through Night Flight and go, oh, he's in this other band? Let me check them out.
Sure.
And then they like Soil Work, and then they like, you know, whatever, melodic death metal. They like Amorphis. They come to shows. They buy merch. That just helps the scene. Shut up. It just helps the scene.
There's a couple songs on the Ghost album that remind me of Night Flight Orchestra.
Yeah.
I'm like, totally. I'm like, oh, this is definitely some AOR stuff here.
Yeah, I could see Night Flight catching some of this Tailwind too, and, you know, giving them a little bit of a lift with this new album coming up.
That'd be cool.
Yeah.
I've only heard a couple tracks. It's not as catchy as the last album for me so far.
Didn't seem like it, but, you know, they're releasing, they're trying, they're throwing everything out there. Like, the album just came out, and now they have a new one coming out.
Yeah, it's
true. They're gunning for it, so.
So before we forget, we did play D side To Hell with God.
Yeah.
From the title track from To Hell with God. We played Red Baron, Blue Max, which phenomenal guitar solo from Ralph Santola from The Glorious Burden with Ripper Owens. And then we started everything off with Millennium from 2000. The song is called No More Miracles. Did you recognize that vocalist?
No, I didn't. And I really liked it. And
you know who it is, right?
It is
Jorn Land, Lande.
And it didn't have his trademark
raspiness, you know, his gravelness. Yeah. It was a little bit more,
Yeah, polished.
Sure.
That was cool. I'm going to go and check that out.
So rest in peace, Mr. Santola. We appreciate all you've done for the metal community.
Yeah, that's a big loss.
So let's start wrapping it up. Thanks for tuning in to episode number 207 of the MSR Cast Metal Podcast. You can find us, of course, on all the social medias, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, at MSR Cast. You can find our sister show, same places, at Metal Geeks. Go to metalgeeks.net or msrcast.com, bring you to the same website. Find us on iTunes, subscribe to us there, subscribe to us there, review us, all that good stuff. Let your friends know about that you listen to the show. We are going on, this is like 13 years that we have been doing this show. It's a long time.
Longer than Kevin Smith.
Yes, and he was jealous about that. Yeah. But if I add up every single listener ever the show, wouldn't add up to what he gets on one episode, so... There's a trade-off there, Mr. Kevin Smith. But thanks again for tuning in. And, of course, if you want to send us an email, msrcast@gmail.com. You have a complaint, a request, something you want us, a topic you want us to talk about, we'll take it. Send us an email there. And they can find my illustrious co-host at?
At the Metal Pigeon, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, @gmail.com, metalpigeon@gmail.com.
And find your website at themetalpigeon.com.
Yep.
Read your amazing reviews and thoughts about the metal industry, because you can articulate everything that I have going on in my head that I can't get into words. So I appreciate that.
I appreciate that. Thanks.
So let's talk about the last band.
Yeah. Not to just gloss over this album.
No.
At the end here, but the new Aishin album.
Eason.
Eason has I liked it when it first came out. I think I gave it another listen yesterday. I really like this album. It's grown on me in the span of a couple weeks here. From I think I like it more than the last one, which I really enjoyed, and maybe most amongst all his solo stuff.
Really?
There's something about this album that's just like really appealing and really compulsive and addictive. And the song that we're going to play, Marble Soul, it has that sort of that quality that's kept me coming back to it. And where I'll have that melody going through my head in the middle of the day. And that, you don't really say that about this guy's stuff, you know, all that often. So, I don't know if everyone else is feeling the same way about it. I haven't really paid attention to how well it got, you know, critically received, but I love it.
I think it did well. I haven't heard anything bad about it.
I think with him, there's always this thing of like, you know, he even said that. He's like, you would never do another Emperor album because people would just automatically say it was great. I'm not sure if that's true or not, though. I don't think that would be the case. I think that people would complain if they wanted to complain, but
I think
I get his point that there would be this expectation that it would be great because it's just Emperor. But yeah, it's not as heavy as the last record. There's nothing like Mass Darkness, which I loved off that last album.
Right.
But it's just, he's singing more. He does more clean vocals on this album. And I think that he's gotten really better, like stronger, like at phrasing and stuff like that. And he just has a better command and understanding of where he can do clean vocals and make it sound good.
And not to take away from Ishan here, but the last Leprous album that came out.
Yeah.
Holy crap, that album has really grown on me. I mean, it's like, it's stuck in my head all the time. It's really good.
Yeah, and I think that he did this one without any involvement from those guys, interestingly enough.
Really? I didn't know that.
Because I don't think Einar was involved in this one.
Oh.
I guess they're just, I don't know. I don't know what the reason for that was, but...
I have to look into that.
He, Leprous just put out a B-side from that album, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a good song. Made you wonder why it didn't make the album.
Right.
Yeah.
All right, well, I think that about does it. I'm tired. I want to go to bed. Too much metal for one night.
Too much, yeah. It was
so check out, this is Ishan, Marble Soul from the album called Amur. And we will check you guys later. Oh, what's that thing we always have to do?
Enjoy your burrito?
No, they don't even do that anymore.
They don't, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Keep it metal.
Keep it metal.
Enjoy, guys.
week, Geekazoids. Thanks for listening to another fine podcast brought to you by MSR Productions. All rights reserved, blah, 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 blah. For reviews, archives of our podcasts, and all your other metal geekery needs, please visit metalgeeks.net. Keep it geeky. Keep it metal.